あれで。
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo. It's June 11th, 2012.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
And today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a great show for you today that's going to include, is sugar really a poison?
And do fungi cause digestive disorders?
And here we go again, another new organ that we haven't found until just recently, the omentum. What is it?
And we have much, much more in store for you.
So if you want to join our conversation, have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
Obesity is usually blamed on eating too much when we eat and not, and also when we eat, and also from not enough exercise. But what's the role of sugar? What does that play in overweight?
Well, sugar is really an interesting thing because first of all, let's talk about what it is. You're looking at sucrose when you talk about sugar, and that's a combination of glucose and fructose. And then you look at high fructose corn syrup, and it's the same thing. It's made of both fructose and of glucose. So how are they different, and why do they react different, and does everybody really agree that they are different? When you talk to Robert Lustig, the neuroendocrinologist from University of California, San Francisco, my friend, who talks about high fructose corn syrup and he talks about sugar, he says they are the same and they do the same thing.
Doesn't he say that sugar drives fat storage and that's what makes the brain think that it's hungry?
That's true, because there's a difference between fructose and glucose. When you look at fructose, it stimulates the brain's appetite. And when you look at glucose, it actually makes you think you're getting fuller.
And this is a lot different than ads that we've been seeing on TV about saying that corn syrup and regular table sugar are the same thing, that the body doesn't know the difference.
Well, that's what Dr. Lustig says, too. He says the body doesn't know the difference. But when you do studies on rats, doesn't turn out that way. You feed a rat a diet of regular rat chow, and you add fructose to it. Over time, these rats are going to have more insulin resistance. They're going to gain more weight. They're going to have more fat in their body. You feed them sucrose, table sugar, that doesn't happen. Now, I don't know how Dr. Lustig answers that, and I intend to give him a call and ask him that, but the scientists who did this particular study didn't know the reason. They did something called an outcome study, which means that what they did was they went ahead and fed these rats what they did. And they noticed that there was a different effect when they used fructose or they used glucose, and they reported it. Now, just because you understand the mechanism doesn't mean that it's not what happens. But at the same time, would that happen in a human being? And there are not a lot of studies that have tested this. There are a few, but not a lot that have tested it. Now, some people think the difference between high fructose corn syrup and sucrose, which is table sugar, is that in the high fructose corn syrup, what you have are free molecules of fructose and glucose, meaning they're not connected together in any way. They're called monosaccharides, meaning just one sugar floating freely. They're not connected. But when you're looking at table sugar, it's not that way. They are connected, and they become a disaccharide, which means that there are two sugars connected together by bonds, chemical bonds. Now, the reaction in the body of converting a disaccharide to a monosaccharide is quick, so you wouldn't think that that would explain it. And you also wouldn't think that the small difference in the ratios of fructose and glucose in high fructose corn syrup compared to sugar would matter, but maybe they do, because there's about 55% fructose and 45% glucose in high fructose corn syrup, and there's 50-50 when you're looking at sugar. So it's a very interesting study, and what you were alluding to, Vicki, is that calorie for calorie, Sugar causes more insulin resistance in the liver than other foods do, and certainly more than glucose.
Doesn't it even act like alcohol?
It does. When it gets to the liver, it acts a lot like alcohol, and it can actually cause the fatty liver to develop just as it does in alcoholic cirrhosis. So it's the early stages of, it causes the early stages of cirrhosis. And that's why Dr. Listig calls high fructose corn syrup and sugar alcohol, I mean sugar without the, alcohol without the buzz, which is really an interesting way to state it.
You know, too, what I've noticed is that a lot of the foods that say that they're low fat, they're high in sugar.
A lot of foods are, and they're also high in salt. And so when you look at the American diet, you're looking at sugar, fat, and salt. Not a good combination, particularly when you look at the type of sugars, the types of fat, and even the type of salt, because it's what? It's the regular salt that's sodium and chloride. It's not sea salt or salt from the Himalayas or salt that has a lot of micronutrients in it rather than just sodium and chloride, which basically are toxic to the human body use too much.
Well, speaking of sugar, how is that worse than fat?
Well, fat's a good thing to have. In fact, there are some fats that are called essential fatty acids that are absolutely essential for health. And if you don't have them, you simply are not going to be well. You cannot be well if you don't have them.
Well, the thing is, too, is that you need some sugar. The thing is, too, is that we need natural sugars that come, like, in the food.
Yeah, eating fruit would be okay, for example, even though it's got a lot of fructose in it.
But one of the problems that we've got in this day and age in our culture is that it's high fructose corn syrup is added to a lot of processed foods.
Indeed.
Which I think is doing a lot to increase our epidemic of obesity. And the high fructose corn syrup is added in a liquid form. And so that means that it's absorbed faster. And if this is true, that high fructose corn syrup increases your appetite, makes you think that you're still hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So you're eating or drinking this high fructose corn syrup, and then it's making you even eat more.
Well,
and yet our government is trying to say that they want to solve the problem of obesity, but I think that there's a conflict of interest because it's a profit-driven industry, obesity. Look at all the money that's being made off of obesity.
I know, and everybody complains about how much it's costing, but the people who are providing the services are not complaining about how much it's costing because the more it costs, the bigger their percentage gets. If there's 2% of $100, that's $2.
And
2% of $100 million is $2 million, and 2% of a few billion dollars gets to be very sizable.
And the government subsidizes corn. And what's corn? High fructose corn syrup. That's where it comes from.
Well, that's right. I think the bottom line here is that sugar is not good for you. If you eat a certain amount, above a certain amount, it's simply not good, whether it's high fructose corn syrup or it's sugar. They're both bad.
It even increases our triglycerides, doesn't it? That's the fat that's in the blood.
Absolutely. And the amount that we are consuming used to be about 15 grams a day. That's a few teaspoons of sugar. Now it's 75 grams a day. And the total amount of sugar that we're consuming per year is in the range of 140 or 150 pounds, of which almost half of that is high fructose corn syrup.
That's a whole person.
That's a whole person made out of
a sugar person.
That's right.
Well, it's also addictive. It's addictive to our brain.
Well, there are a lot of people who are addicted to carbs, and once you get that way, you're driven to eat them, and as you have more of it, what happens is you develop this fatty liver, you develop insulin resistance, and the high levels of insulin cause a few problems to develop, such as hypertension, type 2 diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, cancers, and also high levels of insulin cause the body to convert sugar into fat more easily. And then, worse yet, it locks the fat in the fat cell by blocking an enzyme called lipase, which is supposed to be able to take sugar, to take fat out of the cell and burn it for energy. So this is a bad deal.
Plus, it's also affecting the leptin, which tells us that we're still hungry.
So leptin, if we're going to explain that to people, is a hormone made by our fat cells that when we eat is released, goes to the brain and says, you're full, don't eat anymore. So when you have a meal, that's what's supposed to happen. However, if your leptin doesn't work very well, which is the case when insulin levels are high, then leptin receptors don't pick up that leptin, and we don't turn off our appetite. So you form kind of a vicious cycle here where the high carbohydrate diet, the high sugars that we consume, drive insulin resistance, which drives leptin resistance, which makes you eat more. And that's how one way you could explain this epidemic of obesity that we're seeing.
Well, it comes down to sugar being a poison, huh?
Well, it's like everything else. Water's a poison, too. Even though our body is 70% water.
Well, a lot of the stuff that's in the water.
No. It's the water itself.
Drinking too much, you mean?
Yeah, you try drinking a few gallons of water and see what happens.
Well, like the girl that was in that contest that died.
Exactly. They had a water contest to see how much you could drink, and she died from it, which is no joke.
So basically what you're just saying is too much of anything could be a poison.
Yeah, and a little bit of sugar is fine. Enjoy a little bit of sugar. It's a nice thing to have a balance in your diet. But keep in mind, it's not good for everyone. And some people, it's more of a poison, and to others, it's less of one.
Well, and also, when you think about the more you eat, the more you want of it.
Well, that's right. And particularly for a diabetic, I mean,
it's a definite poison for a diabetic.
Yeah, and what we're still seeing is the American Diabetes Association talking about 5% of your diet made of sugars, you know, table sugar or high fructose corn syrup is acceptable. And it's like, well, if you want to give away 5%, you know, of your reserves, go ahead and do that. But don't you think you're better off avoiding the very thing that causes the problem in the first place?
You know, a lot of people, too, think that they can just eat artificial sugar.
Well,
or take their pills.
The artificial sweeteners, yeah, no, bad idea. You look at people who are taking in Nutrisweet, and they generally get overweight, and they're the ones who, you know, it's the overweight people that are mostly drinking that, which is kind of ironic. And if you look at the rat
studies,
that
increases your appetite, too.
Exactly. You look at the rat studies, and you feed them Nutrisweet, they all get fat and lazy. And so, I mean, there's a small clue there. I mean, just because it's logical to think you're taking in fewer calories doesn't mean for a second that you're going to be avoiding the problem, because, in fact, you may be making it worse, and you are.
So we have some guidelines here for your kids, and I guess it could go for adults, too, and that's like
absolutely.
Avoid soda. Just don't even give them soda.
Don't have any sugared liquids in the house.
You know, you can have sparkling water and put a little fruit juice in it. I mean, that's better than drinking soda.
You know, I like it with lemon, Vicki, and I like it or lime, and I chill it. And that way I get plenty of water every day, and it's a tasty thing. And not everybody needs to do that, but that's a good way to go.
Well, sometimes people like it a little sweeter than with just lemon in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, a little dash.
That's because people are used to having more sugar in things.
Well, that's right.
But also encourage them and give them carbohydrates that have fiber. If you're going to have carbohydrates, do it with fiber.
What does that mean? Eat fruit, not fruit juice, basically. I mean, how many people do you see eating more than one orange or more than one apple? Generally, it's just one. But if you take fruit juice, you could take three or four or five of those, and it's easy. You just drink it down and it's gone. Plus, if you're getting stuff that's in a can or a bottle that's been around for a long time, that fiber doesn't work so well anymore. So what you've got is a combination of gunk, which is old degenerated fiber, and you've got the high fructose corn syrup in there, which is going to be doing all the bad things that it does to you.
Also, get them used to eating whole grains instead of processed grains.
Exactly.
But to check that, when you read the label, like on the bread or whatever, it has to say whole in front of each one of the grains. It has to say whole wheat, whole barley, whole whatever
right.
The ingredient is, whole oats.
If it doesn't have that.
It doesn't say whole, it's not.
It's not. That's exactly right.
This is the same thing with organic. If you're eating organic, it has to say it in front of each one of the ingredients, unless they have an asterisk.
Well, that's right. There are a lot of little things like that that can lead you pretty much astray. So
the other thing, too, is before people want seconds, wait a little while, like about 20 minutes before you have seconds, and by then you might not even want them anymore.
Well, if you can do that, that's great. The problem is yes, it's a great idea, but no, it's not something that's easy to do.
The other thing, too, is to balance screen time with exercise.
So,
you know, so
cut
so
back
like
on that TV and that computer, huh?
That's it.
That's right. So fruit is fine. Fruit juice is not. You want to stay away from high fructose corn syrup. You want to stay away from table sugar. You want to make sure you're getting enough fiber in your diet. And you also want to exercise, because exercise does some wonderful things that can change around what your body does. Because first of all, you're going to burn some calories. Second, it improves insulin sensitivity, and it lowers insulin levels, which is a big deal. And it reduces stress and it reduces depression, which often drives stress-induced eating. And it speeds up the metabolic rate. So these are all things that are really good for us. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Well, you know how laughter is the best medicine.
Indeed.
Well, here's one that'll either make you laugh or scream. It's about a wife from hell.
Oh, gee, that'll make you scream.
Well, a police officer pulls over a speeding car and he says, "I clocked you at 80 miles per hour, sir." And the driver says, "Gee, officer, I had it on cruise control at 60. Perhaps your radar gun needs calibrating."
Uh-oh.
Not even looking up from her knitting, the wife says, "Now, don't be silly, dear. You know that this car doesn't have cruise control."
Oh, gee.
Well, the officer writes out the ticket.
Oh, my God.
The driver looks over at his wife and he growls, "Can't you please just keep your mouth shut for once?" And the wife smiles demurely and she says, "You should be thankful your radar detector went off when it did." Well, as the officer makes out the second ticket for the illegal radar detector unit, the man glares at his wife and he says through clenched teeth, "Damn it, woman, can't you just keep your mouth shut?" Well, the officer frowns and says, "I notice that you're not wearing your seatbelt, sir. That's an automatic $75 fine." And the driver says, "Yeah, well, you see, officer, I had it on but took it off when you pulled me over so that I could get my license out of my back pocket."
Clever.
Well, the wife says, "Now, dear, you know very well that you didn't you didn't have your seatbelt on. Mm. You never wear your seatbelt when you're driving." As the police officer is writing out the third ticket, the driver turns to his wife and barks, "Why don't you please just shut up?" And the officer looks over at the woman and says, "Does your husband always talk to you this way, ma'am?" "Only when he's been drinking."
Oh, no. It's getting worse.
Well, that's the end of that one.
Oh, my God. What a beautiful marriage. Isn't it something? You know, we start out with all this romantic stuff, and for a couple of years, everything's wonderful. Then we get into the nitty-gritty of developing something called a relationship that's built on something besides a sex drive.
You and better be careful what you're saying.
Well,
here.
I'm just going to end good, Vicki. Because as a marriage seasons, it's like wine, real fine wine.
Okay, he's doing better, isn't he?
Well, yes, dear. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Our intestines are loaded with 100 trillion microbes. That's more microbes than there are stars in the sky. That's kind of hard to believe.
It's actually more cells than in the human body. We've got more microbes than cells. I mean, these buggers are everywhere.
And we've got 100 different types of fungi. Mm-hmm. So why do we need all these microbes?
Well, that's right. They do some really amazing things. When you look at what these little microbes do, which are viruses and bacteria and fungi, they have a lot to do with metabolizing hormones and carcinogens and toxic things that come into the gut. They make a lot of vitamins, such as vitamin K, B5, B6, and biotin. They make short-chain fatty acids, such as the butyrate, which is a major metabolic fuel of the colon. They crowd out pathogenic bacteria. They stimulate the immune. I mean, they do so many things.
They digest food, too.
They can. Yes, they can help you do that. And that's why it makes these wonderful things that we're talking about here, like vitamin K, B5, B6, and biotin.
But then what about the harmful ones?
Well, you get the wrong bugs in and they make you sick. It depends on how many are there. So if you have a whole lot of microbes in the gut, like a salmonella or a shigella or a C. difficile or some other toxigenic E. coli, when they get into amounts that are sizable, then the toxins that they make, and most bacteria make some toxins, the amount gets bigger. And when it overgrows in a major way, it may make massive amounts of toxin that will make you sick. So it's important to keep them under control. And they live in a very complex ecosystem that is geared to doing the services that we need and for us to provide them with a little food. So we reward them with nutrients. They reward us with vitamins and nutrients as well.
I thought it was interesting that some of these harmful microbes could actually contribute to obesity, as well as other things like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's and inflammatory bowel disease.
Mm-hmm.
And colitis is an overgrowth of this fungi.
Well, what they found, which kind of surprised me a little, is there were more than 100 species of fungi in the gut. And you begin to get some kind of idea of how complicated the system is, and that it's actually an organ system in the body.
So, isn't that interesting? Because everybody thinks of it as just waste, you know, get that out of there.
Yeah,
I mean, you do need to get it out of there.
You definitely need to get it out of there, or you'll become toxic, that's right. But at the same time, it does all these wonderful things. So I think that, for me, it was looking at that there are so many different kinds of fungi that live there in this complex ecosystem, too. And believe me, there's some fungi that are really good that you want there. Ones like the Saccharomyces that maybe some of you have heard about, Saccharomyces boulardii, is a friendly yeast that crowds out the pathogenic yeast. And we often use that in people who have problems that are related to ulcerative colitis or Crohn's or other kinds of problems that are inflammatory in the bowel.
Like one that can cause a problem that's pretty common is Candida.
Well, Candida for sure. And C. diff is another one that's really that way too.
When you're in the fungus, huh?
No, C. diff's not a fungus. It's an overgrowth of a bacteria, but overgrowth of anything, not just a fungus. But Candida is the primary example there. You're right.
So this brings to mind, for me, a question about colonics.
Uh-huh.
Because when people go to have colonics and when people, you know, do colonics,
uh-huh.
They like to talk about how you have a lot of old feces that are all stuck up inside of your colon and in the crevices and so forth, and then you need to get that out of there. So what do you think about
that? Well, that's just not true. I mean, people say that, and they see things coming out, and they make conclusions about what they represent, and it's just bogus. I mean, I know because I've done colonoscopies before, and when you're up looking at a colon, it's clean and pink, and it looks fine, and all you've done is prep the colon to have a little bit of diarrhea for a few days.
When you say prep it, you mean with just a laxative and an enema.
Yes, and that cleans things out. And
a colonic, maybe some people don't know what a colonic is. They take a tube and go way up high into your colon.
That's right. They put tap water in there, and it's supposed to
wash the whole thing out.
See, I think that we can keep the microflora normal and the contents of the colon and of the whole intestinal tract normal by eating a healthy diet and making sure that we have a lifestyle that's conducive to being healthy. So I think that that's something that happens naturally. I will agree that there are times when something like a colonic is a great idea. For example, if someone has cancer and they want to do the detoxification that comes from that by doing like a Gerson protocol with coffee enemas, that's a treasure, because what that does is you put coffee up there, and what it stimulates is the production of bile, which is what? It's the liver's excretion that goes into the intestinal tract. So all these toxic things are going to be stimulated to go in the intestinal tract, and then all this coffee's up there, which causes diarrhea, to wash it out quickly. That's a great way to try and detoxify. And the proof of that pudding is people feel so good when they're finished with that.
Yeah, they look forward to their coffee breaks.
Well, I didn't like my coffee breaks when I went down to the Gerson Clinic in Scranton.
I thought you didn't have it.
No, I didn't. I had my coffee the other way.
Oh.
Which I thought was a more natural, and it worked just fine for me. But if you have cancer or some other terrible disease, and detoxification is a huge issue, this would be something that I would consider.
Well, just drinking coffee is kind of cathartic anyway.
Well, how it gets there doesn't matter. You put it up one way or put it up the other way, I mean, it's still going to do the same thing, right?
But anyway, what is the mechanism of a fungus in causing disease?
Well, it may be that there's a protein called Dectin-1 that's produced by white blood cells that's used by the immune system to detect and kill fungi. And when you look at people who have ulcerative colitis, a lot of them have a variant of that Dectin-1 gene that makes it not function, and that may be why they get sick. So this is an interesting story.
Also, but, what about this Enderlein theory?
Well, Enderlein theory is very interesting because it talks about microbes actually transforming into other forms. So a bacteria may transform into a fungus or into a virus. And while there's lots of controversy about this, the mainstream medicine thinks this is the most ridiculous bunk they've ever seen.
Well, it sounds sort of creepy.
Well, it doesn't even sound right, but you know, it could be. And there's a whole therapy called Enderlein therapy does some interesting things that mainstream medicine can't do. So a lot of things that we have to look at from that point of view. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from George from Long Island. Hi, George. How you doing?
Pretty good, doctor. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I love your show, especially Nurse Vicki's 2020.
I know. I think it's the best part of the show. I'm down here rolling on the floor.
My question to you is, about 2 weeks ago, you discussed red yeast rice, and you weren't too thrilled with it.
That's right.
So what would you suggest to your patients to get their cholesterol down and keep their blood pressure low?
A healthy lifestyle. See, that's
the
thing.
What would that include, sir?
Pardon me?
What would that include?
Well, you got to eat the right foods, right? A healthy diet. You want to exercise on a regular basis. That'll do a lot to boost your HDL and lower your LDL, and it may even lower your total cholesterol some. You want to get plenty of sleep, because when you got those stress hormones going because you don't get enough sleep, you need to get 7 or 8 hours of sleep every night. That causes changes that will make inflammation in your body, and that will screw up your cholesterol. And that's what the problem is inflammation. So we tend to point to cholesterol as the big issue, George. And while cholesterol is something we really need, because, see, it makes vitamin D. Without cholesterol, you can't make vitamin D. You can't make the sex hormones. It makes healthy cell membranes. It makes neurotransmitters. It's really good stuff.
And many times, you know, doctors will tell you that your LDL is too high, but what's important is the ratio between the LDL and the HDL.
Yeah, that's really true. And so when you're talking about using something like red rice yeast, you've got what in there? Mevacor. It's lovastatin. It's a statin drug. And while I will have to agree that taking it in a natural form is probably beneficial in some way, and I don't know what that would be because I haven't studied it, and I'm not sure anyone has, but I think that that's something to keep in mind. So if I were going to do anything to treat it with a drug, I would think about using that particular product. So for me, cholesterol is a good guy, not a bad guy. It's a marker that tells us we got trouble. So we should thank the laboratory and thank our bodies for doing what it does so we know that our lifestyle is not right. You know, it sounds a little cliche to say, yeah, you got to live a healthy lifestyle and everything will be cool. But it's really true.
And maybe talk a bit about diet, about what's important for lowering your cholesterol in your diet, because I think eggs have really gotten a bad rap.
Well, you're really right there. And I'm looking at more cholesterol is not a bad thing. That's a good thing. My cholesterol, George, is close to 300, but the HDL is close to 100. And I
well, the ratio is good.
Well, the ratio is really good, for sure. It's less than 4, which is what you want. But it also gives me good, healthy cholesterol to do a lot of things that I want that are going to keep me healthy. So I can exercise, and I can use my brain, and I do all the things in my life that I like to do, and I don't have many restrictions. So it's kind of a myth and that cholesterol is bad stuff. It's the inflammation that poisons the cholesterol. that does all this. So eating diet, I mean, eating the right food, I mean, fruits and vegetables are really what you want to be doing more of. Maybe a little less of animal product is not a bad idea if you're worried about your state of inflammation, particularly if you're eating feedlot beef. You know, that's not good food. But if you had wild game or you had food that was grass-fed that's organic, nothing wrong with it. I think it's good. The Weston Price people think it's fantastic. So how's that do to answer that question, George? Does that do it?
Well, you feel that the ratio is more important than the total level?
Yes, I do.
I used to be 525. I got it down to 290.
Well, 525 means that you've got a genetic problem, genetic defect there. It's probably familial hypercholesterolemia. And sometimes I think you're better off, particularly if you have inflammation, to do something about that. And if
you got it, great. He did something. If he got it down to 290, what did you do?
Well, the way he used the red rice yeast.
Lifestyle change and the yeast.
Yeah, well, see, you're on the right track, and that's great work. But you're in the very small minority of people. Most people, they've got cholesterols that are 250, they've got HDLs that are, say, 40, and their ratios are about 6, and that puts them at a high risk for developing heart attacks and strokes and other forms of arteriosclerosis. That's big trouble. And turning to a statin to solve that's not my way to do it. I think if we go after the cause of the disease, we're much better off. So improving your lifestyle is the big thing. Get your weight down, another big one.
So, do you know what your ratio is now?
No, ma'am, I didn't check that out.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
I was on Lipitor, and it screwed my liver up.
Yeah, well, it screws up lots of things and puts you at risk for peripheral neuropathies and for muscle weakness and pain and for kidney disease and for global amnesia. It may increase your risk for getting type 2 diabetes. I mean, lots of things with any drug that you take. And the problem really is, George, is that we don't take enough responsibility ourselves. And it's not just, and I'm not accusing you of anything. I mean, you may be, you know, the perfect specimen in terms of all these things I'm talking about. But most people who have regular problems, not the familial hypercholesterolemics, need to really focus more on their lifestyle. It wouldn't hurt you either to do that. And it sounds like you're making progress.
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you for your help.
George, thanks for calling. You have a good day.
That's good work.
Indeed. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And it's time for Vicki's last 2020 tips. So we'll do that and then come back to the calls.
Well, I'm not Jay Leno, and I'm not trying to be.
Well, I'm glad you're not Jay Leno, let me tell you.
But I came across some things that reminded me of what he does toward the opening of his show, where he holds up these cards, and I can't hold them up and show them to you, but I'm looking at a label here inside of a sweater, and it says Top Gear. These T-shirts were tested on animals. They didn't fit.
They didn't fit.
And here's another one. It shows a door that's been painted, you know, and there's a sign on it that says dry paint.
Oh, geez. So nobody will test it, huh?
And here's another note, another one that's a notice. It says, notice. Thank you for noticing this new notice. Your noticing it has been noted.
That's great.
And another, here's a sign that's sitting in front of a restaurant. It says, today's special. Buy one fish and chips for the price of two and receive a second fish and chips absolutely free.
That's a little confusing.
You know, some people probably just read that order two.
And then wonder what happened when they paid for two.
Here's one and on the front door of a taco place. It says, sorry, we're closed due to short staff. And somebody puts another note up right underneath it. It says, hire taller staff because I need a taco.
I saw that one coming. That's great.
And here's one that says, no senior citizens discounts. You've had twice as long to get the money.
So where is it?
We got an email the other day that had a long, long list of senior discounts.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
What I learned from that is ask. Just ask every place you go if they have senior discounts.
Or any discount. That's right. Barter, huh? Just barter.
I have a story about a shredder. This young engineer was leaving the office at 5:45 p.m. when he found the CEO standing in front of a shredder with a piece of paper in his hand. Listen, said the CEO, this is a very sensitive and important document, and my secretary's not here. Can you make this thing work? Well, certainly, the young engineer said. He turned on the machine, inserted the paper, and pressed the start button. Excellent, excellent, said the CEO as his paper disappeared inside the machine. I just need one copy.
Oh, jeez.
So the lesson is never, never, ever assume that your boss knows what he's doing.
Well, that's true. You can kind of assume a lot of the time. Well, I won't say it, but it's true. All right, thank you for that, Vicki. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputa here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, scientists have found the function of another organ.
Another organ.
Just like they finally found out the function of the appendix and the gut microflora, like we were talking about a little while ago, in the pineal gland.
Really?
But it's interesting that we often say that there's no function when we don't know what the function is.
Isn't that a little bit arrogant? It's naive arrogance is what that is. Can't figure out what this is, so it must not do anything. Let's take it out if it's in the way.
Yeah.
I remember doing what they called incidental appendectomies, meaning they're in there doing some other surgery, and, well, the appendix is right there. Let's take it out so nobody gets appendicitis. Thank you very much. We now know what the appendix does. Do you know what the appendix does?
So what is the omentum, and what did Chicago researchers discover about its function?
Well, I learned in medical school there was a fatty membrane in the abdomen that lined the abdomen and covered most of the organs but didn't do anything. Maybe it was a fat repository, a place to store fat. But some people who are doing organ transplants were doing some studies, and what they found is that this particular tissue could take activated immune cells called T cells, and if they'd been exposed to antibodies, it turned them off and actually killed them. So it's got some kind of effect on the immune system. The other thing they found that was kind of shocking is it's loaded with stem cells. They're called mesenchymal stem cells. And what do? They migrate to regenerating or damaged tissues so they can regenerate like they're supposed to. Interesting. So now we have this fatty membrane that's all over the belly doing some important things in the immune system. So to say it doesn't do anything because he doesn't know is a dangerous thing. And it was the same thing with the pineal gland when I was in medical school. They said it didn't do anything, and its most important function was if it was calcified and people had head trauma, they could do a sonogram of the head and see if the pineal was moved over a little bit to one side or the other to look for hematomas in the brain. Nothing to do with regulating every endocrine system in the body in a very important way. And what about the gut microflora? You know, stuff called stool? That's an organ? You got to be kidding me. But we've been talking about it all morning here, or all afternoon for you all. And indeed, it does all these things we were talking about. A very indispensable organ that if you don't have, it's going to muck up your immune system. So here we are. And what about the appendix? You know, we didn't talk about that. What could the appendix do? Is it some kind of vestigial organ that just sits there that maybe 100,000 years ago was valuable in some way, but we no longer need?
Doesn't that provide us with our probiotics that we need?
Absolutely. It's a blind sac, so it's full of stuff that's secreted by the surface of the appendix, and it stores microbes there. So that when you get an infection and it goes through the intestinal tract, it can't push into the blind sac because it's continually oozing stuff out. So it is a storage place for probiotics, for those important microbes that live in the gut, so that when the infection ravages throughout the intestinal tract, particularly the colon, it will be able to repopulate it. It's like taking a probiotic when you need it. Duh!
Nature!
And it took us all this time to figure it out. So here we go again with making assumptions about things when we don't know.
So when we're talking about the omentum, mm-hmm. how does that affect the immune system, especially for transplant patients?
Well, I mean, if you don't have an omentum, you're not going to have that kind of control. of the immune system. I told you that what it does is it suppresses activated T cells that have been exposed to antibodies. So if you have that, okay, if you have that problem, as you do in autoimmunity, now you've got an organ that can control it. So it's a big deal.
So is there a special way you can keep the omentum healthy? Because, you know, a lot of people we talk about brown fat and people that get big fat abdomens and that's not healthy. It's a precursor to metabolic syndrome and diabetes.
Well, you're right. And so when we eat too much sugar and we develop too much brown fat, okay, in the abdomen, and we get what's called visceral fat, the problem that we run into is the metabolic syndrome.
So what we want to do, I guess, is to keep the fat and the omentum with healthy fats.
Well, it doesn't have a whole lot of fat, but it can be a fat repository. It can be a place where we store fat. Not a good idea. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Spitter with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from John from California. Hi, John.
Yeah, I always wonder if my ratio's all right.
What's your ratio?
On the cholesterol.
Uh-huh. What's your total cholesterol?
It's 180. It used to be 210.
Uh-huh.
And I started taking red yeast rice and dropped down to 180.
Uh-huh.
And last time I had it checked, it was 36 HDL.
Uh-huh.
And then the other one, see, is 63, but I can't pronounce that word. It starts with TRI.
Triglycerides.
Oh. Yeah.
And
that's
then
good.
The other one is 131 LDL. It was checked by the VA in Long Beach.
Okay,
California.
Good. I've got enough information to go there.
Okay.
So if your total cholesterol is 180 and your HDL is 36, your ratio is a little bit high, which means that even at 180, which means that total cholesterol is usually what we think is a great place to be, it's not, and it's probably because either you're overweight or you're not fit or you're not getting enough sleep or you're exposed to environmental toxins or you're under a lot of stress. All those things.
All three.
Yeah, you've got them all, huh? So red rice yeast is not the answer to this, but it could improve things a little. They certainly improve the ratios that you have, but you still have the underlying inflammation. So your best solution here is to deal with it that way.
You have to get at the cause.
You get at the cause and do all those things, those three things that you said you got, and you'll be doing a lot more for yourself. The problem is you have to do it, and it means it's changing your lifestyle a bit.
What should be 36 be?
It should be about 45.
I'll put this next time I see the doctor. 45 on the 36. And what about the 63?
The 63 is perfect. Triglycerides are wonderful.
That's I'll put okay next time.
Yeah, you're blessed with a good body that is able to manage fat metabolism pretty well.
Those are the fats in your blood.
Right. Okay. So your job now becomes to live a healthier lifestyle and see what happens, and you'll probably be a lot healthier.
How about the 131? What should that be?
Well, that would be better under 100, and for people with heart disease, you'd like to see it down lower than that yet.
Okay, under 100.
Yeah, and the main reason for that, do you have heart disease?
Well, I don't know, I'm 70 years of age, 6'1". I weigh 190 pounds. I used to be 220, but I developed pancreatitis, which now I have to really watch my diet.
Yeah.
And I'm taking Coumadin for a blood clot, so I think all three is kind of throwing my appetite off, so I dropped 30 pounds.
Oh, boy. Well, gee, you need a doctor who knows a lot about these things, who will manage it more naturally, in my opinion, than using drugs. And you're on the right track anyway, because you're not wanting to take a statin that's a statin made by a pharmaceutical company anyway. You want to do one that's more natural. So you're on the right track, John. Thanks for calling us.
Thank you.
You have a great day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Ray from Yonkers. Hi, Ray. How you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Saputo and Nurse Vicki? I called about a month ago about the infrared phototonic stimulator. I haven't been able even to find Maurice Bales. telephone number. Is it Maurice James Bales?
No. Why would you want to call Maurice?
I can't seem to find any. I go to Acupuncture Man, and he's using a light there. I haven't been to him in about a year.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to find somebody that's using that modality, the infrared light therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I live just north of New York City, and I haven't been able to find anybody that does that.
Okay, well, I'm not going to give his number out on the air, but what you can do, you can email me at Dr. Len, D-R-L-E-N.
D-R-L-E-N,
Dr. Len.
Okay, Dr. Len.
At drsaputo.com.
At drsaputo.com.
And I'll answer your questions for you, and if necessary, put you in touch with him. But he's not making equipment for sale right now.
Yeah.
We're in the research part of that right now, and we're doing clinical studies at the University of California, San Francisco.
Why do you need it, Ray?
Well, I'm a longtime skater, and I'm having trouble with my knee. I mean, Nurse Vicki, I did 1,600 stairs the other night. I'm not having any. I haven't. Range of motion is not good going down.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem going up. So, I went for acupuncture. I went through everything. I had a total hip replacement about three years ago. It's magnificent. I mean, I have no problem with my left hip. I went to the hospital for special surgery.
Uh-huh.
But I want to get back. I haven't been on the ice since last July, and it's I'm going to make an effort to get back.
How old are you, Ray?
I'm 74.
Oh,
good for you.
Congratulations.
You know,
great.
I just wanted to throw something out here that sometimes Len gets patients from out of town, pretty far away sometimes, that just come and stay for a week. They stay at the hotel that's nearby his health medicine center, and they come see him every day for a treatment, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a good idea, but yet at the same time, I'd like to know more about what's wrong with your knee before I offer that. The photonic stimulator may not solve a problem if it's osteoarthritis, and it may, and there are
it's a sports injury, Dr. Saputo, and quite a ways back in the last 3 years. It's but I am very. I do a lot of walking. I do stairs two or three times a week, I miss my skating a big time. If I told you how long I've been skating, you wouldn't believe it. But I went to the hospital for special surgery, and a doctor there did a magnificent job on my left hip. I could say it's perfect.
What did he do? Was it a hip replacement or a resurfacing or what?
Total hip replacement.
Uh-huh.
And I have no problem. Good range of motion. I've been a vegetarian for 55 years, and my diet is excellent. But this is a sports injury, and I don't want to go. My doctor at the hospital for special surgery wants me to go for a knee replacement, and I figure that's outside of a year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Oh yeah, right.
So, I'd like to look at. Can you tell me how effective the phototonic stimulator is?
Well, the phototonic stimulator is pretty effective at relieving pain, at stimulating increases in circulation, at speeding up healing by about 50%, reducing. Increasing lymphatic drainage, and it's great for pain because it also makes the nerves less sensitive to pain. So, and that all happens in minutes. So that when we treat somebody with that infrared light, it really does a lot. And what I want to do is refer those people who don't know about infrared light therapy to the website at drsaputo.com and just put infrared light therapy in the search box. And by the way, the site's completely free. There are no charges for any of the information on the site. And you'll learn a ton. There are lots of audios and videos that talk about that, what it does, along with many, many other things. So for you to try infrared light therapy would make some sense. You might do better trying to find somebody local there. There is a doctor in Pittsburgh. Her name is Connie Haber, H-A-B-E-R. H-A-B-E-R. She's in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And you could do a Google on her and connect with her, and she may know somebody in your area that's doing infrared light therapy, and you could try it. Because, people who have problems with arthritis, osteoarthritis, which is probably what you have, sometimes they're bone on bone, and they do quite well, and you're going, wow, how could they do so well? And you see others that have just a little bit of disease, and they can't exercise because of the pain.
That's right.
So it's worth doing what you can. DMSO is another good thing that I think a lot of people should consider, keeping in mind that I'm not your doctor and I'm giving you information. And ozone therapy is fantastic. If you can find somebody who will inject ozone in that joint, it may do a ton to relieve the inflammation and get you back functioning again for a while. Who knows, months to years.
And what about glucosamine?
It might be of some value, and it's worth a try. Glucosamine with chondroitin is a good way to go. So there's lots of stuff there that you can do. But we're out of time here, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much, Dr. Saputo and Nurse Vicki. I appreciate it, and I'll follow up on those things. Thank you so very much.
We appreciate it.
Hope you can skate again.
Yeah, indeed. So we want to thank you all for joining us today, and I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news in health and to take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. The prescriptions for health will also be archived on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics that we discussed, you can go to DrSaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos located on DrSaputo.com under radio. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe, so if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week. See you next week.